Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 29th. I'm Rick Graff. Say, are you a stamp collector? Are you a coin collector? Are you both? Well, all you collectors out there, we have good news. Bob Scott and David Tripp join us this afternoon. So if you are enthusiastic about coins and or stamps, get your call in. These two know what they're talking about. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or call, no, or email voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email, or call 800-348-2551. That's if you have a stamp collection or a coin collection or a specific question about them. Feel free. Give us a call. Stamps and coins after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Collectors, it's the exciting moment. This is your Super Bowl already. This is when we bring the stamp and coin experts back to talk to you. Joining us today is Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He's currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. It was an 8-cent Truman stamp, I believe. And also with us is David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin Tapestry at Musical Instrument Department, but he's not here to talk about the musical instruments or the tapestries. He's here to talk about coins. He's the author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and The Mystery of the Lost, 1933 Double Eagle, as well as he's also a fine art consultant and a cartoonist, and we're waiting patiently for his Christmas card, frankly. They're always good. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Fellas, how you doing?
I'm well. The Christmas card is at the printer.
Is it? Is it nice this year?
No.
No? It was. Last year was your best yet.
Well,
I still have it on my desk.
Then this will definitely disappoint.
Really? I don't replace the old one until you get a new one in here, so.
Well, maybe I just won't send you one.
All right, I'll keep that one. I'll recycle it. Fair enough.
I always keep them. I just add to them.
Do you really?
Yeah, permanently on display.
Do you have a collection of them at home?
I do.
Oh,
I do.
How much is it worth?
I didn't know he's got to die first.
All right.
Oh, that's encouraging. Thank you.
All right. So you get, you know what? The best part about having these guys here. No, the second best part. The best part is that they come in and do the show. The second best part is they do my show prep for me. And I have a list of wonderful things that they talk about. And it's pretty funny. There are about 5 different coin listings and only one that says stamps. So I think, David, you must have done this.
Yeah. I cannot tell a lie.
You did do that, didn't you? All right, we'll start with the stamps.
Thank you very much.
So I'll just throw this out there to Bob. What is the most expensive first day cover ever? I used to have a lot of first day covers, and they're not worth much.
That's the issue. The funny thing about first day covers is all the unique stamps that exist, if they happen to have been used and they happen to be on an envelope, you know, the sky's the limit. The U.S. really controls the market in great first-day covers because they had very, very high-value stamps issued in the 1890s through to the early 1900s. So if you had a dollar stamp that was on an envelope when a dollar really was something,
yeah,
and you took the time to go and buy it and send it on the first day, you know, you're probably looking at $30,000 to $40,000.
Wow.
Today. The Zeppelin stamps, people have heard of Zeppelin stamps. They were existed in 1930. Bear in mind, that's a year after the Great Depression of 1929. Who had 65 cents, let alone the 130 or the 260, to put on one envelope on May 15th, 1930?
I had those stamps.
That's $30,000, so they're good. But the thing is, 1930 is really the date. If you go up to 1930, you're going to get first day covers that are worth something. But after that, people saw, oh, if we say first day cover, there's almost an unwritten rule. If it says first day cover on it,
it's not
worth anything.
Ah, that's interesting. Those Zeppelin stamps, on the other hand, were my favorite stamps. A brief period of time when I was little, I collected stamps, and there was a stamp shop in town, and I got these. And I swear I've looked for them over the last 45 years, and some relative must have chucked them. I had a nice wax envelope full of these.
Which means that they were probably clean and fresh.
Yeah.
And crisp.
Oh, yeah,
and
they
new.
Were unused. Yep.
At the prime in 1983, so that's now, 40 years ago, they were selling for $7,000 a set. I'm sorry, I just thought I ought to rub it in while I had the chance.
All right, I'm done talking to you now. Oh, look at this. This is interesting. David Tripp, you say that more and more. You know, you guys are here to taunt me today.
We love it.
That we use metal detectors, my wife and I.
Yep.
And we, you know, we get a lot of wonderful nails, various vintages.
Yep.
This hoard in Japan is insane. Tell us about that.
Amazing. There were some construction work going on in one of the prefectures in Japan. They dug in the hole, and there was about 100,000. Ancient Chinese and Japanese coins, bronze.
Wow.
And the way they used to do it, because they all had the holes in them. These
yep.
are actually cash, was what they were called, cash. That was the denomination. But they had holes in them so they could tie them together in bundles of 100 apiece.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 1,000 bundles
wow.
of 100.
Amazing.
So it's about, you know, the size of it. You've got to remember coins are small. So it's about a yard and a half long by about 18 inches deep. And you've got 100,000 coins. And they're not just anything coins. I mean, there are coins there that go back to the 2nd century B.C. and right up to the 14th century A.D. So you've got over 1,000 years of coins.
All right, that's a long time.
Yep.
Who was depositing coins for 1,000 years in the same hole?
Well, my sense is, you know, it must have been some wealthy family or ruling class, and it was an accumulation. And of course, in those days, there were no banks, there were no safes. So if there was a little war going on or some insurrection, where did you hide your coins?
That is
in the backyard. So
that's
you dug
amazing.
A hole, and obviously.
But all the in the same hole
yeah. Yeah,
for
exactly.
1,000 years.
Yeah, the coin made it through the war, but apparently the owners didn't.
That is, we don't know how much they're worth?
Not yet, no, because they're actually, this is such a recent discovery. They've only just started to identify them. I think they've identified about 400 or 500 of the coins so far. And they've got a date range of over 1,000 years. It's amazing, absolutely amazing.
And then the story that I love is somewhere in the UK, you say yeah. somebody found a couple hundred gold coins under the floorboards of their house.
They were doing some renovations to a kitchen, as I recall, and they tore up the floorboards and they found 250 gold coins, mainly from the 17th and 18th centuries.
Amazing.
Which they then sent off to auction in London and got, well, £850,000, so about $1 million.
More than $1 million now, yes.
So, Ray, rip up the floorboards, dig holes in the backyard. It's going to look like Bugs Bunny was rabbiting around.
It already looks that way.
It's
like
that
the
movie.
Surface of the moon with craters.
It's amazing.
It's that movie Holes. If you saw it when your kids were young.
Well, you know the thing is though, every time we dig, after a couple of few weeks, my wife will put grass seed down, so we have these patches of really nice. We have terrible lawn in the back, and then patches of just beautiful green grass.
Well, it's also because you've dug the hole,
right? And we've aerated the soil.
We've aerated the soil, and so the grass grows higher. This is a great part of archaeology. During World War II, they were flying reconnaissance flights, and they noticed that late in the day, if they flew over certain fields. And they developed the film afterward in black and white. They found you could find the outlines of a Roman fort. You could find, so that's actually become a very important part of figuring out where things were in the ground. And simply for the reason you said, it's aerated the soil. The seeds go deeper. They're stronger. They go up and they're higher. And late in the day,
interesting.
So stand on go up to the second floor of your house.
Yep.
Take a picture down, and then maybe you'll find what you're looking for.
I don't think we will, but unless it's nails, in which case I am on it. I'm very much
Maybe
sure.
Maybe you can build a new house with your old nails.
Your old rusty nails. It's probably better than nails we have. All right, very quickly, and then we'll jump to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a stamp or coin question for David Tripp at Bob Scott. 800-348-2551. The bottom thing here says stamps and coins overlap. Recently, there have been more and more stamp news popping up in coin publications. I never thought there was crossbreeding involved
here. Well, but it's the coin and stamp guys, so what else would it
be? Yeah, so what's up with that?
I mean, it was a person local to this area, I mean, certainly your listening area, who spent more than $2 million on a single example of the inverted Jenny.
Yeah.
And it's
reported and that's been
in the
picked
Washington
up in all
Post.
The coin magazines.
The inverted Jenny, is that the plane?
It's
that's
the upside down
and that's
airplane.
The one that Bob sold the record one, the four, the plate block.
I sold the block for $4.8 million. This was just one, so never hinged, just like it came out of the post office, just over $2 million.
It's a beautiful stamp on its own.
Yeah. And then the upside down.
But this is the best of the best the best.
That sounds like something from Men in Black.
That
the best of the best of the best. Sir.
Sir.
All right, let's do an email here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Stamps and coins today with David Tripp and Bob Scott. And Mike in Saratoga writes, when I was a kid, I had an H.E. Harris Statesman Deluxe stamp album. I still have it. And it has many used stamps from the early 20th century, 1900s to 1930s. Could any of these have value beyond a few cents? All right, Bob, here you go.
No.
Was that the long answer or the short answer?
There's one or the other. But it's a great thing, but it was used for collecting old stamps off the mail at a period where a lot of other people were doing exactly the same thing.
So there's no rarities that you could find in a Harris
book. Unless your set of Zeppelins found their way in there.
Yeah.
What would a hinge set of Zepps be?
A hinge set of Zepps in this day and age, if they were just about okay, $400 maybe.
What still?
They'd retail probably a little bit higher, but you could get $400
that's
for
dinner
them.
At McDonald's for
yeah,
two.
Yeah, that's a bottle of 18-year-old Booker's, I'll tell you that. All right.
That's pretty much it, yes.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. David Tripp, Bob Scott, your call's coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. We are back on the air with David Tripp and Bob Scott. And before we go to the phones, just quickly, David, I know you had mentioned you were heading across the pond for a big sale, and it's done now, right?
The sale is done.
How'd it go?
We were talking about it in the last show, fabulous ancient Greek coins. Now, there is a market that is hot, hot, hot.
Really? Why?
The stuff is beautiful to look at. Even Bob, who only knows flat art and stamps.
You said that derisively.
I meant it
okay,
that way.
Fair enough.
When you convert the heathen, you can convert anyone.
These things are they are works of art, and they're in spectacular condition. It was a wonderful collection that had been accumulated over 20 years ago by a really discerning man. And the people with deep pockets, there was a man from the United States, the West Coast of the United States, who was on the telephone bidding for the entire two-day sale.
Wow.
And the sale, we estimated the sale at about $3 or $4 million, brought 10.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely mine. I was sitting there just with my mouth.
Do you get a cut?
Sad, but untrue.
No, you don't get a cut.
No, we just do the work.
You got to find another agent. All right, let's go now to Hudson. James, you're on.
Hi, hold on. I'm going to take you off speaker. Hold on.
Splendid.
Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi, James.
Okay, so echo. So my mother showed me something when I was home for Thanksgiving. It was a 1884 Liberty silver dollar.
Morgan dollar, yep.
I told her it was not going to make us millionaires. It's in fair to poor condition. But I just, what should she look for?
Because
we didn't have a magnifier with us.
Okay, well, the thing to look for is you turn the coin over, and on the back of the coin, the reverse, there is the eagle with his spread wings. And right beneath his tail feathers, there's a chance that you'll find some little letters. If there are no letters, it means it was made in Philadelphia. But you could get CC for Carson City. You could get an O for New Orleans or an S for San Francisco. That does make a difference in value. If it's really beat up, the value is going to be
not so beat up. It's in fair condition, I would say.
Okay, but your fair condition to a coin guy fair.
Oh no, well, I actually told her because I listen to the show all the time. Yeah. So I told her don't expect to be a millionaire.
Well, right, okay. Yeah, so let's put it this way: if it was an 1884 CC Carson City, that's what you want. So a Carson City in really crummy condition, I mean, really beat up, is going to still be worth $100, $125. If it's in of nice condition, you could get a couple hundred.
Mm.
With 1884, there's a really weird one with an S for San Francisco. In really beat up condition, it's worth about $40 to $50. An absolutely pristine one. I got the privilege of cataloging it a few years ago for a Sotheby's auction, about the finest known example, and it brought $750,000.
Okay.
So my guess is...
Well, I bet we don't have that one.
Okay. Well, I was trying to make you the millionaire.
Well, why is the San Francisco...
No, I would love to be, but I'm a realist.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that's good.
But why is the
it's
San Francisco...
It's probably worth more than the silver weight, though, right?
Definitely worth... Any of them is going to be worth more than the silver weight, but the CC is going to get you a few hundred dollars. The reason for Ray that they went into circulation. They were masses that went into circulation. And so it was one of those weird years. They all went out. Very few were kept. Very few survived in great condition. So it's the survival rate. And I'm looking at a little chart here in front of me. This is how the condition goes. Really crummy condition, $35. Nearly uncirculated, close to 2,000. And then we've all talked before the various grades above that. It goes from 2,000 to 13,000. Then it would get to MS-64, which is not really nice, 110,000.
Yikes.
The one we sold was MS-67. 735.
Okay, let's quickly, and we'll get to the next caller in a second. 800-348-2551. MS-67 is the best?
No, MS-70 is theoretical perfection.
And it's not happened?
It is. Brand new coins that are being made today are being packaged and put into slabs as MS-70. That means theoretically they have no flaws at all.
Now, given that the difference between a 67 and a 66 might be a rather large leap in money.
Ginormous. Yeah.
Okay. Who does the grading and how do you make sure that that person or entity is accurate and arbitrary?
It is arbitrary. That is
you
the
hit
trick.
The word. That's the trick. But it is arbitrary. I mean, everybody's eyes, we are all trained in the business. We've figured it out over the years. There are two major grading services, PCGS and NGC, that do it for a living. They have people who they spend their entire day in dark rooms with single lights looking at them, and they have a series of criteria that they're looking for. And it's not just how perfectly it's struck. Some years they were made poorly. Like in New Orleans, the coins were generally, for some reason, they didn't make them right, so the dies were too far apart, so the coin relief wasn't fully struck, so the coin looks worn even though it's mint condition, but it can still be mint condition. So there's one of these companies was sold to one of these hedge fund guys recently for over a $500 million.
Wow.
Dollars.
Now, when they get a coin, say David Tripp finds a 67, 19, or 1884 Liberty dollar and says, I need this checked out and I need this graded. What kind of steps do they have to take to be careful with that? What if you're in the lab looking at this thing and you drop it on the floor?
Well, if you're in the lab and you drop it on the floor, nobody knows.
Well, the person who owns it might know.
Well, that's it. Take pictures beforehand. There are dealers. You can look this up online if you have a coin that you want to have professionally graded.
Yeah.
Most dealers have affiliations with either PCGS, NGC, or both, and they will, for a fee, you can take it into a coin dealer, but take pictures of it so that you know how good it looked going in, so that you know it's the same thing.
Has that happened before?
Back. Not that's been made public, not that I'm aware of.
And you would
I
know.
Mean, these guys are really good and really careful.
Take a picture which personalizes it. So make sure, like, your hand is in it.
Oh, great idea. Yeah.
Because a picture is just a picture. You have to personalize it to you.
Exactly. These guys speak wisdom. The number here is 800-348-2551. Bob Scott is here. He'll answer your stamp questions. And David Tripp is here, who will answer the coin questions. And now let's go to Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My kids recently got some stamps that were a collection from their great-grandfather, and it's kind of just a hodgepodge, you know, in an envelope sort of a thing, nothing very serious, I suspect, but we were trying to figure out what are, like, the basic steps to, like, look these things up. Is there a website or a book or something? They're really interested in, you know, trying to figure out if they're worth anything.
Well, the mystery of finding out exactly what you have is actually one of the great things. Pretty much every U.S. library will have a Scott catalog, and a Scott catalog will list, or certainly all the major libraries will list, all the stamps that are issued. But you can go online, and you have to do a little bit of research. Firstly, most of the stamps will have some kind of... The only country that doesn't put its name on its stamps is actually England, Great Britain. So you can find the country if you're not even sure that it's the country. If you have some strange lettering, you can try to approximate. I mean, especially if you have Cyrillic or a different language, you can try and approximate what it says. And you'll be surprised if you add in the term stamps, how identifiers will actually show up, which will start asking you questions so that you can identify the particular stamps. But a lot of common sense will get you 99% of the way there. And once you can do that, you'll identify, and you'll usually find if groups of stamps are together, if you've got one from one country, you'll probably find quite a few of them are from that same country over different periods.
But this is the fun of it, though. That
it really is.
The adventure of discovery.
And then you'll get into,
right.
You know, looking up, get a perforation gauge, which you can actually print online, and you can find out, because you can have five different stamps that all look like basically the same thing. So it's actually, that's the mystery. It's finding out what you have.
Jesse, thanks for the call. This perforation gauge business, aren't all the stamps the same? In other words, if you have a certain stamp of a certain year, certain issue, won't it have the same number of perforations?
Absolutely not.
Well, what's the deal with that?
Well, you can have various things. You could have, I mean, for those of us that are old enough, we can remember perforated stamps in the first place because they're all self-stick these days. But the perforation, the most common perforation is 11 dots or 11 holes per inch.
Yeah.
So it's perf 11. Then you can have perf 10s, perf 12s, depending on which perforation, because perforation meant going through a perforation machine. So if you had enough stamps, it might have gone through a different machine. It might have gone through one machine going horizontally, then another one going vertically. The difference can be that you can have one stamp that is perf 11 and one stamp that is perf 10. The perf 10 is worth $1,000. The perf 11 is worth $5.
Okay, that's interesting. So more perforations are not worth as much, because would be easy to fake that.
Oh, absolutely.
Add an extra perforation.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's not. If you perforate a whole sheet, you get perfect perforations. You do it on a single stamp. It's really hard to get it right.
And how do you know that?
He's tried, probably.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It is one of the hardest things to detect, but you get a sort of eye for it over the years.
Interesting. Let's go back to our phone lines, 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. We'll go to Connecticut. Paul, where are you in Connecticut?
Simsbury, Avon.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. You have a great show. I'll listen more because of these guys.
Well,
I want to focus on stamps. I have three conglomerated collections from an uncle who's long gone. These are not great grandfathers, my dad and mine. And it's a pretty good overlap with a prior question, so I'll kind of synthesize it as, what website can I go to myself in value, because I've seen a few, A, and B, regarding going to a reputable dealer in the tri-state area, is there anybody you can really leave this stuff with, very overlapping with the coin point, where you go, hey, take a look, and all of a sudden they find the Zeppelin stamp. I know enough about this to be dangerous. So how do you really trust someone? Because I've read enough about this that it's an integrity issue is what I'm kind of throwing out. So you follow the question?
Right, I do. And probably the easiest way to answer the integrity question is probably find somebody that's been in business for over 20 years. Because bad will's out. It's just that simple. The second thing is do your due diligence beforehand, because if you've got particular collections, so you know what type of stamps that you have, it's very easy to go online to any, you can go to the Scott Company and you can actually get the catalog, or if you go to a dealer and you talk to him nicely, he might give you an old catalog.
Have old catalogs. Guys, I'm not a novice at this. It's just, first of all, I love people from Britain. I wanted to talk to you anyways.
Oh,
if you're from Britain.
It's kind of like a zoo here. Come see the fellow from Britain.
But the thing that frustrates me is I go back to countries that are, you know, part of the old Soviet Empire.
Right.
And it's so confusing to value those things. And I stared at one time and I go, Dad, when he was alive, this is maybe worth $1,000 or it's worth 52 cents. So I don't have the patience to go through thousands of stamps at the point.
I'll give you a really good, because if these things were bought from dealers in the first place and you have one of those situations where you think $1,000 or 52 cents, flip it over.
What?
Look at the back, because the valuable stamp, it's almost certainly, if it's an old-time collection, it'll have a dealer mark on it, or it'll have a little signature, or it'll have something. If it's plain, especially if it's in rotten...
No.
And they're also as good as the company they keep. If they're in a whole run of very, very inexpensive stamps, their chances are you got the 52 cent.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
That's some information
for you.
And your old catalogs will still be good as a guide to
relative rarity.
And to be honest, if the catalogs are from the 70s or the 80s, they will be retail guides. They still might, don't get carried away, they might be valuing your collection at higher than it actually is.
Fair enough.
But you've probably got all the information you need to find out what is actually good.
So let me get this straight, Bob. A dealer would put a little initial or on the back of a potentially valuable stamp.
Look at the British Guiana, the world record stamp that I've sold twice. It's got 7 different marks on the back of it because every owner's put their little mark
on it. Well, that's a rare stamp. But what if you have something that's $10-$20 and somebody wrote on it? Then the value's down, yeah?
Because like David has graded stamps, we have certified stamps, and it certifies the stamp is genuine. And in certain countries, when they do this, the expert signs the certificate but then leaves his initials on the back of the stamp. So you can tell that the stamp that it's the same thing. It's personalizing it. The stamp that he's given you the certificate for is the one where he's put his little mark on the back.
But you could never get away with that in coins. You do get collector marks on coins.
Because you can't deface the coins.
Right. But I mean, there are good ones.
And there's been talk of micro marks, you know, like they do with diamonds.
Yeah.
They've been talking about doing that to coins, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, micro. I mean, there's something, you know, we're going to get to blockchain photographs and AI, and then we just won't.
Then I'm out of that. I check, please.
Well, you'll be talking to a machine, not us.
And maybe the machine will do all the talking.
And we'll be underground.
And there'll be less mistakes from the host. Let's go to Robert and Phoenicia. Robert, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Hi. I have a 1937 D three-legged buffalo nickel and I believe it's in UNC 55 condition.
All right, about uncirculated. Yeah, that's...
Right. What would you think that would be worth?
Has it been slabbed, as they say? Is it in holder. We'll assume the grade is correct. Dealer to dealer, the wholesale price of that's about, say, $1,000, $1,200, maybe $1,300. Say about $1,200.
Okay. It's in one of those square plastic protections.
Okay, from PCGS or NGC or something like that?
It was actually found in the parking lot of ShopRite and Liberty.
Wow.
That's better than Ray's backyard.
That is so cool, man.
I see
great.
That coming.
My brother-in-law found it and knew I collected coins and gave it to me.
Oh, how fabulous.
I went to ShopRite and I asked if anybody came in to say they lost something like that, and nobody ever did.
That is fantastic. But so it's about a $1,200 coin, something in that.
Good job.
The other question I had quickly is,
sure.
1981 coins and before have a higher precious metal content, right?
1964 is where...
Well, that's the pure silver.
That's the silver line, yeah.
Right, but even the copper...
Oh, for the pennies and things like that,
82.
when they changed the... you know, to be honest with you, I don't know who the quantities would have to be so vast.
Right, for anybody to trouble themselves
it. Yeah, exactly. It's the basis of doing that is not really, it's not cost effective, in my opinion.
All right, Robert, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Stamps and coins today, Bob Scott and David Tripp, and you will be back. Buddy Rich of the orchestra, we're so sorry, Uncle Albert. 800-348-2551, but we haven't had a bloody thing all day. Bob Scott is here. He's the Brit. David Tripp is from America. A couple of emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Russ. 1797 to 1799 coins is the subject heading. I have a collection of South American coins, 1797 to 1799, with holes drilled in them. Is there any value to these coins, or does the hole diminish the potential value?
It's like anything else. Depends on what the coin is, the specifics. If it's a gold coin, people use gold coins for jewelry for years, particularly really teeny, tiny, tiny ones.
Yeah.
So that would have value. Less value, to be sure. But if it's a bronze coin or something like that with a hole in it, and if it's worn, it's going to be pretty much worthless.
Okay, but the Asian coins were designed that way.
Yes, the Asian coins were designed with holes, and there are other issues of coins around the world that were designed with holes intended to be in them. But I'm thinking off my top of my head, 1797, 99, South American. I don't think of any coins that came ready-made with holes.
All right, this is an email from Joe. As a kid, my Australian parents enjoyed stamp collecting. I now have 3 to 4 large boxes of thousands of stamps, primarily European and Australian. Some books with nice rows of stamps, but not full. I doubt it's worth the cost of a full appraisal. How can I find a home for this gathering of stamps? Oh, wait.
Ding, ding, ding.
You would say put them on envelopes, but this person's not in Australia.
I get the feeling these are used.
Doesn't say.
And the best thing is to get a general feel of what the years are and if it's all... Because there's a good chance it could all be post-1960, then it's going to be just entertainment value for the kids, and find children and give them. There's a wave coming. Stamp collecting is sort of generating more interest again, and kids will pick it up. It's kind of a fun thing. And the best thing that you can have if you're getting into it is a box of stamps.
Yeah.
So it's no harm, no foul. You can't do anything wrong. You can't, if you break them, if you tear them, if you soak them, if you whatever, you're just learning. And it's there to have fun with. And so that's probably the best thing. If it goes before the Second World War, then start thinking about getting a catalog and looking up the individual values. But enjoy them.
All right, this is from Thomas in Watervliet. I have 100 or so 4-stamp blocks of 3-cent stamps from the 50s, small wax paper envelopes. I believe my grandfather purchased these to begin a collection for my late sister. Online, these seem to be valued around a dollar. What do you think? This person is looking for a likely buyer, and maybe you could just give some general information before he sells.
It's almost certainly going to be, that's retail prices. 3 cent stamps from the 1950s. It's a question of how many do you have to put on an envelope to make up the, whatever, 60 cent rate these days, 65, 66 yeah. cent rate, which is just so many. So they tend to be discount postage. If they have their plate numbers, so that's the just the print in the margin, they have a margin and they have a set of numbers there, then they might be worth keeping. But even then, it's only going to be a couple of times.
What do those numbers mean? I've seen those on those four
blocks. It's the number of the plate that was used. So the first stamp that was printed from the first plate was actually plate one in both America and England, followed by 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. You keep track on the individual plates because you use, for a very, very popular issue, you don't just use one plate. You might use multiple plates. So it also means that when the sheets are being checked and if they see a massive fault in one, it's like, what's the plate number? Okay, it's that plate. You can go and refer. So it's a reference point.
Very interesting.
But, of course, because it's an anomaly on the sheet, people have collected it. The plate block of the inverted Jenny that I sold is the most valuable part of the sheet. So that's why somebody paid $4.8 million for it.
This is an email, and I'll show you the picture, Bob. How can I find out more about whether my stamp is authentic without spending a lot? If it's authentic, if it's not authentic, is there still a market for it? And it's a New Orleans Civil War era ? And you could just make out the stamp. It says it's kind of sepia red. I guess it's red. New Orleans. And then I think it's here. Take a look, Bob. See what you think, and then we'll move on to the phones again. Oh, no, not yet. Wait a minute. Who did that?
I'm pushing buttons.
Let's see. How do I do this? Okay, there
we
go.
You've been doing it for a couple of years. You know how to do this.
Well, that went on by itself. I didn't press any buttons.
It is absolutely genuine. I'll give you an idea of what it's worth.
What is that?
It's a New Orleans. It's a Confederate States New Orleans.
Oh, I never knew that. I knew they had Confederate money, but not stamps. Yeah. Of course,
it makes
Confederate
sense. Money, and they're actually a few Confederate coins.
And, of course, the Confederate stamps are, they're all native to specific towns and specific cities. This, of course, is New Orleans, which makes it a not overly scarce example. But before I suddenly jump up, and it's not in the greatest condition.
No.
But I will have a quick look. I happen to have the right piece.
I have the right book.
All right, so fair enough. Why don't we take a coin question?
Cool.
Well, Bob is
absolutely.
All right, the number is 800-348-2551. Bob Scott is here. David Tripp as well. Sky in Great Barrington, you're on.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon.
Hi, Sky.
A great show. Nice to have you here. I found recently a Rutherford B. Hayes $1 coin.
Yes.
And the print is very tiny, so to the best of my reading ability, it's 1877 to 1881.
Well, it's actually not. That's when he was president.
Oh, okay.
The problem with these are the presidential series of dollars, which they began in, I think, 2007 with George Washington, and they are covering all the presidents all the way around. And the problem with them is the dates are on the edge of the coin.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
And so that's where you have to look. But in fact, just to make it short for you so you don't have to look, they were made, you know, year by year. So we know which presidents were struck in what years. And Rutherford B. Hayes, they were struck in 2011. And they were made in the tens of millions each, somewhere between 30 and 40 million a year. In mint condition, they're worth pristine condition, a dealer would probably pay about $5.
Okay.
So for the most part, they're pretty close to spend them.
All right. Fair enough. Sky.
Okay. And another quick question.
Go ahead. Yeah.
A friend of mine, I don't know the date or anything, a friend of mine recently found a double-headed George Washington nickel. Is that sort of a trick
It's probably what we call a magician's coin, which somebody cut down the middle and then sealed the two pieces together. So heads you win, tails I win.
Well, that's how they did that.
That's exactly it.
That's what somebody said. Okay, thanks so much, you
thanks,
guys.
Thanks, Guy.
Great show.
All right, we have a little information on this New Orleans Civil War era stamp. What do you think, Bob?
Well, what it is a New Orleans, Louisiana 1861, so it's a Civil War era Confederate postage stamp. It is a 5 cent brown. It has as an item on cover, it's probably worth maybe $40-$50.
That's pretty great.
Right. Hey, that's
had
pretty
it
good.
Been, and its code number is it's a 62. It has a catalog number. It's a 62X3. Yes, 62X3.
Remember that.
Had it been more reddish in color and had it been beautiful, you could have been looking at $4,000 to $5,000.
It looked fairly red to me. But do you want to see it again?
Not
I guess
red
stamp
enough.
Collecting not is not
enough.
For people.
Not red enough.
Stamp collecting is not for colorblind people.
No, it's not.
Okay.
No, it's not.
That's why I gravitated to coins.
There you go. Let's go now to our phone lines again with Bob Scott and David Tripp, and let's go to Jana in Pine Bush. Jana, you're on.
Hello.
Hi,
thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is for Bob.
Hello, Jana.
I have inherited, and you hear this all the time, I'm sure, I've inherited my father and grandfather's stamp collection, only this is not the usual story. My grandfather and grandfather were stamp dealers at one point in time.
Oh, what name?
I have what I know must be a fairly valuable collection of stamps.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using Stamp Manage, online stamp cataloging,
yes,
trying to catalog all the stamps that I have in numerous albums, big albums.
Yes.
I've spent thousands of hours and I've cataloged 16,000 stamps.
Mm.
And I'm doing that because I want to, it's not my hobby. It's become my hobby, but it's not my hobby. And mm-hmm. I want to sell them.
Right.
What do you suggest as a way to go about it? And for reference, probably my most valuable stamp that I can ascertain is a Scott number 5, Benjamin Franklin stamp.
Right. The
and
type
then it
1.
It goes on from there.
Yeah. The type 1, does it have a certificate?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. So it's used. Does it have any marks on the back?
That I don't know. I'd have to dig it out, and I can't do that right at this moment.
Okay. I mean, this is obviously something. I mean, you've done an awful lot of work. Are you cataloging according to Scott?
Yes.
And
yes.
So you're using their retail prices.
I don't know if you're familiar with Stamp Manage.
It's a software.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of an inventory thing,
so
that gives a value of stamps. But also, I have some very old, like 1980s, some 1990s stamp catalogs that I've been using too.
Okay, so you can get your way around it. And how far are you through the lot?
I'm down to like the last. Well, there's a stock book which I don't even want to. That one scares me because they're not in any kind of order. But I'm down to the last of the big stamp albums, and so I'm getting close to the point where I want to approach someone, and I want to know, is an auction the appropriate way to do this? And like the gentleman from Connecticut, I'm a little concerned about
who do you trust?
Just leaving all of this in the hands of someone and
yes, okay. Quite simply, there are quite a number. Well, there's at least three very long, well-established, reputable auction houses. Depending on what you have, I think David will give our information out later. I will be happy to just point you in the right direction.
Okay.
But it really depends on what you've got. The thing that troubles me is if you come from a dealer family, Do you have lots of certificates?
I don't think I have any. They
right.
would have been dealing in
Or they might have been
stamps.
Separated from the collection.
Right. So just don't make any assumptions until somebody's okay. actually had a really good look. That's probably my best
sure.
advice.
Right.
But I will certainly sure. point you in the direction of somebody that will help you and will be reputable.
We might as well do that well, email address right now. Go ahead,
yeah,
David.
It's Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, Coin and Stamp Guys at Berk, B-E-R-K, .com.
You got that?
And we can, yeah. Coin Jenna? And Stamp Guys at Berk.com.
At Berk, B-E-R-K,
as in Berkshire, yes.
Yep.
Uh-huh. .com.
.com.
And if you get in touch with Bob, he'll be happy to give you whatever guidance is necessary.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I do know that my father, at one point in time, used this collection as collateral for a loan. And I have distinct
okay.
memories when this must go back 50 years. And I was a child, and we went to the Avenue of Americas to pick up his stamps. So he
wow.
had them with
oh.
some place
cool.
down there.
That's
you know,
neat. Well, you might have something there.
Yeah, that
thanks for
fantastic.
The call. Let's go to North exactly. Adams. Jill, you're on.
Hi.
Hi,
was
Jill.
Calling. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I worked in the White House back in 1996 to 1998
yeah.
In the Clinton administration as an assistant, and my dad was a coin collector. And one thing I had done was I went to the local bank. I have a $100 bill,
yeah.
and I had it signed with the original signatures of Robert Rubin and Mary Ellen Withrow at
oh,
the
so
time,
you had the comptroller
Secretary
and,
of Treasury.
And the Secretary of Treasury, both signed in the bill. That's fabulous.
Yes, and it's framed by was the framer at the time, or the person who framed everything for the president at the time.
Oh, gosh.
And so the one mistake I did was not get a brand new $100 bill. So it's a used bill, but it has the original signatures. And I just wondered if that
it's going to have
what
it's probably going to be worth. I mean. A used $100 bill from that era is going to be pretty much worth $100, $110, something like that, if it's absolutely perfectly crisp and well-centered. With the signatures on it and a little bit worn, it's still probably, it's a fascinating, it could be worth 50 to 100%
wow.
of face value, so $200,
okay.
$300.
That's nice.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Thank you.
My dad was speechless. It was a fun gift.
Oh, it's a great thing.
Very cool. Jill, thanks for the call. Very quickly now, let's go over to Ron in Western Massachusetts. Ron, you're on.
Yeah, hi, guys. First-time caller.
Hi, welcome.
Guy, I have two questions. I have a small stamp question. Are authentic Nazi German stamps unused have any worth to them?
People collect them. They're actually quite widely collected. They suffer from the whole thing that people don't throw away money and people don't throw away stamps. And in the period immediately following the Second World War, grabbing your swastika-laden stamps was probably not good. A lot of them went into the drawer, and over the past 75 years, a lot of them have been coming out. So there's no real scarcity to
mm-hmm.
them. So that probably answers your question. Pennies.
Right.
Pennies generally, they are worth looking at. They're worth looking up because there are, of course, with every little area,
exactly.
one or two that are worth a couple
it worth
of hundred
the time
bucks.
If you find it.
All right, we have about 45 seconds, Ron. Go ahead with your coin
okay.
question.
And my coin question is, I inherited probably a large coffee can of each of the dimes of, pre-1964, all silver.
Yep.
Coffee can of each. I'm kind of a quandrum. What do I do? Do I go through the whole thing and go through every coin and see if there's a rare one or rare? What
well,
would be anyone's advice on
first
that?
First of all, going through them quickly beforehand, it's worth the time. Get,
yeah.
get a red book, go through them, because if you find a 1916 dime, your day is made. You got $1,000 suddenly. It's fun
right.
to do, and there are enough rarities in that series that in my opinion, it's worth the time.
Okay. We're about out of time,
okay.
by the way. Ron,
okay.
thank you for that call. David Tripp, once again, how do people find you guys?
We are at Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at Berk, BERK.com.
Well, here comes Count Basie. We are done for another program. Bob Scott, thank you.
My pleasure.
David Tripp, thank you.
Always a delight.
Support comes from Real Pickles, a worker cooperative in Greenfield, Massachusetts, producing organic, raw, fermented vegetables sourced from Northeast family farms and found throughout the Northeast. RealPickles.com. At Vision XL Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310. And the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting WAMC's Any Questions? Live Trivia Challenge with hosts Ian Pickus and Mike Knopfnagel, December 7th. This is exciting. Trivia at the Linda. Team registration and information at thelinda.org. Thanks again to David and Bob for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls. Many apologies if we didn't get to your call or email. These guys will be back in 2024, and we will, of course, answer your questions then. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman and Dr. Valerie Rapson. We go up to the final frontier. Tomorrow, we'll see you at 2 p.m.